Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotura, the chef in the hat.
We're here at the Hot Stove Society, as we are every week, or most every week. And as you can hear, I have my FM sultry NPR voice on.
Whenever
I go on NPR and like KUOW or something like that, I sound so different than when I am on Cairo.
It's the
filters, right?
It's the filter and the booth.
Tina, how do they do that? How do they filter your voice to make you sound like...
It's all training.
Okay, so it's not mechanical.
Yep, nope. You learn to lower your register and get in some vocal fry.
This is the Seattle Kitchen Show, and we talk food and wine every week. We're happy that you joined us. We have 2 hours worth of show today. We'll see if my voice lasts that long. We're going to talk about Wagyu beef today. It's a big topic out there, and our friends over at the Butcher's Table and at Mishima Reserve were here a few weeks ago, and we chatted with them about Wagyu and what it means and why. You know, I'm a little tired of the whole thing that it's better than prime.
Right.
It's different than prime.
Correct.
Right? That's how I look at it. Because sometimes I'm in the mood for that kind of richness, where you eat less steak but a more rich steak. It's like sometimes you're in the mood for foie, right?
Because
it's all fat, right?
Right.
It's just luscious and lovely. Sometimes I'm in the mood for a choice steak, like a big cowboy steak, where I want more chew and more...
More personality.
Yeah, more... Well... I'm hesitant to say that, but I'm just saying Wagyu is a style of beef, and so I'm looking forward to getting into that conversation a bit. We're going to talk healthy food substitutions for those of us who are trying to eat better in the new year.
I'm always trying to eat better. I don't know about substitution, though.
Yeah.
What I already eat seems to be pretty good and doing pretty well.
Yeah. When do you do?
I know. I just keep eating more.
Okay.
I've been
preggers for about 61 years. We're going to talk dry January. You know, our dry soda is from this area. You've seen it at all the grocery stores.
I'm actually doing a show with upper class with... Cheryl Klaus, the CEO of Dry Soda, on January 31st, at the end of the month. But the whole month of January is focused on Dry January because a lot of people take the month as a break and try not to drink. And I have a very hard time understanding that personally.
I know.
I only drink when I want to, but when I want to, don't tell me not to drink.
It was the first resolution I broke this year. It was about 1 o'clock on New Year's morning. And I hadn't had a drink since midnight, and I was thinking, wow.
You had a drink the year before. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Hadn't drunk since last year. And, of course, we're going to finish up our first hour with Cabbage, which is our new game show, which is going to be a truth or lie type scenario. So we're going to find out if our audience members are on the money or not. Hour two, lots and lots and lots of show today, but of course we're going to finish up with Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. So hang with us for all 2 hours. We're going to have a ball. Let's jump right into Ordinary to Extraordinary, Chef.
Absolutely.
We do this often on the show. It's where I will give you an ordinary dish, something that people might cook every day at home, and you will give a technique or some advice and turn that ordinary dish into something very extraordinary. Today we have a soup theme. Chef Thierry, I'm going to start with you. How about French onion soup? How do you turn a French onion soup from ordinary to extraordinary?
Well, I would say make your own stock. Start from the beginning. And it takes a long time to make a good onion soup because we put beef stock, veal stock, sherry, onions that are reduced, you know, that are sweated down to a beautiful glaze. And then we put sherry on top of that. We reduce that down, then beef stock and veal stock, and then cook it down slowly until the onions are perfectly ready. And then we serve that into a bowl. Croutons on top, either a slice of bread or preferably all the baguette. You want it to be soaking the liquid. You don't want it to be a soft bread. And put that on top of the soup. Then a beautiful grated of either Comté or a cheese that melts. So you want it to be grated You want it to be on top. And then put it under the salamander and melt that puppy down until it's gratiné, which is the word gratiné to most people is related to gratin. But the word gratiné actually means to be cooked under a flame or a heat where it forms a crust. It's beautiful blonde to dark blonde gratiné. And that's what the word gratiné means.
And so, Chef, go back to one thing there.
Yeah.
When you say to a beautiful glaze on the onions.
Yeah.
What color? Are we talking like the skin of a hazelnut? Are we talking more like... like a cashew blonde?
Yes, cashew blonde. I'm not looking to caramelize the onion because that's too much. You're not trying to get to the point where the onions are like a caramelized onion, because if you cook those onions, if they were caramelized and you cook them for that long, which is, it takes a long time to cook an onion soup because you're starting with a lot of broth and you want to slowly reduce it down and get that intensity. Your onions are going to be pureed. They're going to be completely... You're not going to have any texture left. You want a little bit of texture in your onion soup. You want to taste the onion, and you want to be able to have it in there. So melt it down all the way to light blonde coloring, mm-hmm. and on medium heat with butter. Don't be afraid. Even if it's January. Okay, fine. You can use olive oil, but just today.
Okay, and then go back to the bread for a second. You said croutons or a... Like a slice of bread, right?
Yeah, this is where you keep your old bread. Bread for the purpose.
I don't believe in old bread, personally. If it's old, it's old. Throw it away. You should use fresh bread.
You're a very rich man, my friend.
Whatever. Put it in the freezer. I guess my point is, do you toast those croutons or your crostini?
So what I would recommend is you slice your bread the day before and leave it out.
Okay.
You don't need to toast it because it's going to get high heat under the salamander. Just slice the bread... half an inch thick, you slice your baguette, and then leave it on the counter so it becomes bone dry the next day.
So when I've had onion soup at your restaurant, you put enough bread in that soaks up most of the soup. Is that, like, let's say 50%.
You went the day we made a mistake.
So let's say 50%. I like that.
No, 50%, but not all of, I mean.
Well, I'm sorry, 51% would be most. 50%. So my point is, I don't think people put as much bread in as you do,
yeah.
And I really like that.
And the reason we put more bread, we cut cubes of bread and we dry them up. And then we put a good amount of cheese, and if you put enough bread, it will hold your cheese right on top, which will allow it to gratinate and make a beautiful crust on top of your soup.
All right, now we're going to learn about Wagyu when we come back on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
And we are back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. I promised you a special, and we're talking about it again today. We had Walker Lockhart from Mishima Reserve in last week, and we talked for a bit about the grading process. We also gave you a promo code, Seattle Kitchen 20. If you go to the website and put that in, you get 20% off immediately. But we also wanted to talk about how to cook some of this gorgeous beef.
Right, and also, where can you find Mishima beef? Because that's a very special beef. So where do you find
it? A special beef. We're starting to you're going to see it in some grocery stores, but you can always find it on MishimaReserve.com. That's where you're going to have all of our cuts that we sell.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, so let's talk about that. Last week we talked about the grading system. You said, if I am remembering, that you like the 5-star. On your website, it's 4, 5, and 7-star or ultra, right?
Ultra grade, that's correct.
And you like the 5-star yourself.
That's my favorite. That's correct.
Of the three. So now it's Christmas time coming up. People are starting to think about whether they're getting a standing rib roast, a ham, a turkey. I think something that is super fun and gorgeous at the dinner table is a whole beef tenderloin.
I agree. My grandfather, when I was growing up, we would do whole tenderloins. Mm-hmm. And so it was a real family tradition for my mm-hmm. family. And so it's something I absolutely love. There's a little bit of a trick to cooking it, but it's just a gorgeous cut of beef, but I think it really is accessible for folks.
So I'm not sure how. Does yours come fully trimmed?
It comes partially trimmed, and so you're going to need to do a little bit of butchery.
All right, Chef. How are you going to? You got a partially trimmed tenderloin showing up at your house.
So I'm going to, at the end of the loin or at the head of the loin, there is two different pieces of meat.
Correct.
There's the side loin. I don't know what you call that part.
The Chateaubriand is kind of what you're going to get out.
Yeah, the Chateaubriand. Yeah.
But so you have the chain.
You want to make sure, most importantly, then you remove the silver skin on the beef tenderloin. Mm-hmm. That's the most important part. Anything else, the fat, it's like you can always eat fat, especially good fat like that. And I think that the other most important part is don't overcook it. Because that's easy to do on a beef tenderloin.
Well, we're going to get to that, but what other trim are you going to do? Are you going to take the chain off?
I'm going to take the chain off.
Which is kind of sinewy piece that runs the length
correct.
Of the loin.
And most importantly, the silver skin. To me, I go down to the meat. You have to get down to the meat. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to have some chewy
and
piece of
it. I'll just throw just one little thing in there. When you're cutting that tenderloin into filet mignon, so 8 ounce or 10 ounce steaks,
right.
Then it really is important to get the silver off.
Right.
When you're cooking the silver like we are in a whole loin,
oh, yeah.
And the silver's going to hit the pan, it's not quite as important, so don't freak out about it,
no.
All I'm saying.
Because
when it cooks, it tenderizes.
You should never freak out about anything. You should just chill out.
Okay, Walker. So what are we going to do now? Are we going to season with salt and pepper?
Well, that's a good... you can serve it with salt and pepper. You can season it with a bunch of different steak seasonings. I personally like a garlic powder or a garlic, granulated garlic... in my salt and pepper with that. And I always salt and pepper a roast like this at least 4 hours in advance, if not longer for a larger cut like that, just so that salt penetrates all the way through down to the center of the cut.
And so you could even do that the night before, right?
I agree, yes.
Yes. Okay, no problem. Okay, now we've got our whole thing. Now that's hard for people to find a pan long enough to do a whole... A beef tenderloin is what, 7 pounds?
It can be five to seven,
okay.
Depending on how much you trim off. If you're going to cut it down to that...
I think somewhere in the five-pound bracket.
Right, and if you do cut it down to the Chateaubriand, it's a 3 to 4 pound. That
right.
serves about six people really nicely.
So would you suggest cutting it in half and searing it in two pieces, or do you like the presentation of the whole loin?
I think the whole loin is the way to go. And so the question for me is, am I going to roast it first, or am I going to grill it first and get a nice sear and then finish it in the oven? And so there's really a debate out there, especially around the reverse sear. And I was going to ask you, is that a technique that you've been using?
I'm a sear first.
Yeah, I'm completely a sear first. Especially, I'm going to sear it in brown butter.
And in brown butter.
I'm going to use straight. It's such a tender meat. There is no two ways about it. It's a straight, brown butter searing on all sides, well seasoned and brown butter. And I would cut my loin in half. Because I don't have a pan that would be logically big enough to keep that kind of heat. And I know that if I use a cast iron pan, I would have a better results on all this. Or a very heavy bottom pan. So I'm going to cut my loin for about, 10 inches, 8 to 10 inches. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest pan I have. I'm going to sear that loin really nicely in brown butter on all sides. I'm going to put salt, pepper, and fresh thyme because that's my favorite herb. And once it's nicely browned and nicely seared, I'm going to put it on the rack, on a pan, and roast it in the oven.
Go ahead.
And I'm looking for medium rare, nothing more. I do not want to go any
further. What's the temperature that you cook it to?
125.
125.
And that's it. I'm going to stop at 125 because it's going to carry...
The carryover.
And all that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be at 130 by the time I'm done, which is... By the time I let it rest and slice it, it's going to be beautiful.
Now, I would suggest that if you take it rare, that's fine. A lot of people love it that way. But it is just like eating tartare, right? It's like eating raw steak.
Yeah, rare is not...
Especially tenderloin. To me, the flavor really is in the cooking of it.
Yeah.
Agree. We have a lot of our customers that are starting to really get into sous vide. And so a Chateaubriand especially that smaller cut where you can fit it really nicely into a pan is a cut that really lends itself to sous vide. So you're not going to overcook it that way, but you are going to finish it in a pan, butter at
cast
the end,
iron, yeah.
at the end to give it that coloration and that caramelization.
Right.
And so we have a lot of customers that are asking about that. And especially, look, you've bought a really nice piece of Wagyu, and sous vide really takes some of that guesswork around temperature out of that.
And if you're going to grill it, I suggest you butterfly your loin. You just go straight down, butterfly it, so it's all the same thickness, nice seasoning like you do a few hours before. And then throw that on your grill, nice char on the outside, no flame, but just nicely grilled on the outside. So your whole tenderloin will have a beautiful seared flavor.
And don't forget, if you don't grill it and you have a pan, pull that, while that tenderloin is resting, throw some sliced mushrooms into those drippings, a little bit of bacon fat, and that's a beautiful garnish.
Nice little brown butter on the dash of
that
vinegar.
That sounds lovely.
Okay, our promo code at the Mishima Reserve website is SeattleKitchen20. Again, we don't make a nickel off of this. We're just fans of the beef. And we thank Walker Lockhart from Mishima Reserve for joining us.
Thank you very much.
All right. All right, we are back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rocher, the chef in the hat.
And we are cooking away here for our grocery bag challenge that Abigail set up for us. And Chef has already started sautéing or peeling his last of the season corn.
Don't mock me.
Thank God it's the last of the season. controversial foods. And that's not one of them, but there are some ones out there that we have a lot of people either like or dislike. So we're going to ask our audience to yell out yay or boo when they hear the ingredient that you think is controversial. And then Chef and I will chime in. You guys ready out there?
Yay!
Black licorice.
Yay!
Are there any yays? Two yays out of 20, so that's...
Three. I'm in with the yay.
You're in with the yay. Chef, why do you like black licorice? I'm with the booze, honestly. Yeah.
So. Well, because I was... it's one flavor that I really like. If you use black licorice into, let's say, a fish stock,
uh-huh,
and you reduce that down and finish with a little nugget of butter or something of that nature, you end up with a very delicate anise flavor, not in-your-face anise flavor, and I think it works really well with beautiful, fresh spot prawns, and see it quickly... Put them into the broth like a little soup, uh-huh, and it's really, really delicious.
I would say the place that I like that kind of licorice-y flavor the most, is the strongest I like it, is fennel. I just don't love it much stronger than that. And when I get black licorice candies or like Good and Plenty's, or even there's a lot of popular black licorice candies from Australia now or Austria, it just is too strong for me. I find it too takes over. So that's okay. My feeling on black licorice. Okay, so the audience agrees with me, Chef.
Just yes, I realize that.
This doesn't happen very often, so I'm going to milk it while I can.
Nice.
All right, audience, yay or nay on Brussels sprouts?
Yay!
Okay, there's how many nays? Wow, not one person hates Brussels sprouts?
Not one person is capable of standing to the Brussels sprouts.
Yeah. You know, somebody... yeah, that's amazing. My wife thinks they're turtle heads. She hates them. So, but I think Brussels sprouts have made an incredible resurgence over the last 5 or 8 or 10 years and have become super popular. And you like them too, right? You and I both like them.
I love them. I love them roasted. I love them. I actually love them blanched if you're going to season them with something like, for example, that crispy chili that you have there. Blanched Brussels sprout, which basically stinks up the whole house. Can be delicious if they're well drained, tossed in a little bit of butter, and then finished with that little crispy chili garnish. You know, it gives a nice little bite to it. But roasted is my favorite way to get it. Just throw them in the oven. It's a very easy dish to make. You just throw them in the oven after you toss them in a little bit of olive oil, salt, pepper, and garnishes. And then, you know, you just put them in the oven at 450 degrees until it's beautiful and colored on the outside, caramelized, and then...
You know what really bugs me about Brussels sprouts?
What?
I feel like chefs feel like they can take and do anything with them and make them a meat dish. Like, a lot of times they're a vegetable side in a restaurant, but then they're either cooked in duck fat, they're cooked with bacon, they're cooked... And they're just overly greasy. And they're deep fried. They don't treat them like other vegetables. They become something else. And I just want a good Brussels sprout. The other way I really like them is when they're shaped very thin, like a slaw, mm-hmm, and then you can stir fry those in 20 seconds. You really don't have to cook them much at all, and they keep more of that texture. Okay, next one in our list from Tina is cilantro. Yay or nay on
cilantro?
How many nays on cilantro? Not one.
My family.
Your family hates it. All right. Because, you know, it's a chemical thing, right? The people that love it and hate it, it's typically a chemical in your body that reacts to it differently. Not unlike asparagus pea, as they say. You know, some people get asparagus pea. Other people don't. So that's...
Some people don't?
Some people don't.
No. Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. It's a protein or something that reacts with your body chemical system.
Right. I knew about the taste. I just didn't know about the pea. Huh.
Okay. This has to be broken into a couple of different parts here, this next ingredient, because I like some and I cannot stand others. Liver. Let's break it down. Chicken livers.
Yes.
Still booze. 50% yes. In pate or straight up chicken livers like sauteed? Sauteed. Ugh. I don't know how you do it. Yeah. I could eat a bite. But when they're pureed with 50% butter or 100% butter, that's when I like them. Calf's liver.
Boo.
Boo. Everyone's no one. When I first started as a cook at the Hotel DuPont in Wilmington, Delaware, calf's liver and crab cakes were our number one sellers at the hotel Brandywine Room dining room.
Yeah, things have changed.
Yeah. Very interesting. Okay, the next ingredient is olives.
Yeah.
I'm a latecomer to olives. I am just now starting to crave olives. And so what did you guys say, yay or nay?
Yay.
100%? Any nays? You're a nay. You're
small amount.
Yeah, you can eat them. That's kind of the way I always was. I could eat them, but it's not something I crave. Now I don't. I'll reach for them. Terry, how about you?
I'm a big, big fan of olives. I love olives. I love many different kinds of olives, and I love them in many different ways. But raw, cooked, I mean, I probably could live on olive and dates and, you know, things like that.
I know you love your olive tapenade.
Yes. Olive tapenade is a great thing, man. It's like you dice some olives, and then you mix them with a little bit of shallots and thyme and even basil if you have some, and you just put that as a topping on salmon, on lamb, on chicken, on many different things, and it just never goes bad. It always does a great addition. And olives keeps very well in your refrigerator. You know, just keep the brine. So it's a great ingredient. It's an ingredient you can buy in a bigger bulk, saving a little money, and still have good utilization of it. It won't go bad on you, not like a head of lettuce or something.
All right, here's one. I think Tina hates this, if I'm not mistaken, but I don't know. Blue cheese.
Oh.
You hate blue cheese?
I used to love blue cheese, but now no more.
Because you're a vegan or because you just don't like it?
I think because I'm vegan.
Okay. That,
like everything kind of, my whole palate changed when I went whole food plant-based because I took sugar out. So my palate's totally different. So all sugars taste really weird to me. So food's
What's
really
that got to do with blue cheese? It's not full of sugar.
No. I just think whatever the flavor for blue cheese, it's no longer appealing.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, things change.
You know, I find it amazing. Well, you're vegan, so that takes blue cheese out of it. But I'm always amazed at vegetarians that eliminate so many other things from their diet, right? You know, when you've already eliminated all the meats and stuff.
I know. Just keep on going.
Eliminate cheese is something.
It's not easy.
All right. I'm in the middle of my saute of broccoli and delicata squash and sweet onion. I'm going to get ready to add my garlic chives. I've got my Vietnamese pork meatballs in there. And the last thing I'm going to add is the chives and the clams, because the clams are going to cook pretty darn fast. And I'm adding a lot of chives. I have a full handful of chives. Abigail, get back on the mic for a second. Is anything surprising? You say you don't cook much. Is anything surprising you so far about us cooking? Well, Chef Terry is still prepping.
Yeah, I'm making a salad of endive, corn, and fennel with some pears.
So anything surprising you so far?
I was pretty surprised when you pulled out that gigantic box of butter. like, I can't eat butter.
You said cook healthy. So I didn't use margarine.
That. Yeah. Yeah, I love how many fresh ingredients you're using. Like I said, I've lived in the dorms for a while, so definitely everything was either frozen or in a can, and we didn't have any stovetop even, so
right.
We had to just microwave everything.
Yeah.
So it all looks delicious.
I am definitely a veggie person, so wherever I'm adding my protein, just like Chef said, protein's only four ounces out of a whole dinner. Full of vegetables and fruits and, you know, the pears and leeks and grapes and pomegranates and cooking with the rainbow is kind of interesting.
I also really like Chef Terry's trick over there to cut his corn. He put a bowl upside down inside another bowl and put the corn up on top of it and was cutting around it, and then all the kernels just fall into the bowl. I thought that was really clever too.
That's how you don't pick up the corn kernel from the floor.
Yeah, and the plating looks really, really fancy to me. So.
All right. We're going to continue on. I'm probably going to be done for our next segment. You probably got another couple.
I got another day to go.
You got another day to go because you're making a two-course one, right? You're making
That's
a
right.
salad. Okay. All right. We will move on from there. Blue cheese. I love blue cheese. Was the audience yay or nay on blue cheese?
Yeah.
It looks like we're 50-50. Yeah. And if you like blue cheese, there's different kinds that are delicious, right? So there's Roquefort, which is sheep's milk.
Yeah.
And then there's Gorgonzola from Italy, which is cow's milk. And, of course, the Oregon Blue, which is cow's milk. So this is our dinner party.
That's
on
right.
Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. It's time for who's telling us a load of, who's giving us a load of cabbage? We used to call this fibbage, but we found out that's an actual game online, and I'd love to use that. So now we're going to give you a load of cabbage. And my favorite thing to do with a load of cabbage is make sauerkraut.
I'm pretty sure the...
I love sauerkraut and kimchi, right? Napa cabbage.
Pretty sure the cabbage association is going to come after us, too.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever. Hello, Tina. Tina's our producer here.
Hi, Tom, Terry. So here's what we're going to do. It's kind of based on two truths and a lie or the online game Fibbage, whereby I'm going to give you a prompt, and you're going to tell a story. The story you tell may be true. It may not be true. And one of our audience members, we're going to start here with Alex. He's going to guess whether your story is true or false. Chef Terry, we will begin with you.
Okay.
Wait. What are you giving away, Terry, if he guesses right?
Well, because he's... Did you try the...
I did. That's lovely.
You smell...
Get close to the mic.
He's
close
holding up his eau de toilette.
Did you like the eau de toilette?
Right. Yes, that's lovely. And I hear it's locally sourced and
it
made
is.
In small batches.
I think
right?
we're going to have Charlie...
By a very small person.
We might even have Charlie sell it.
Okay. All right.
All right.
And
so,
I'm going to give away a... Hot Stove Society bread knife. That's a nice little thin blade.
Yeah.
Yep. $30 value. Oh my God.
Mine
is
$500. Yours is $30. Mine is $500. Just
okay.
kidding.
You smell really
just
good.
Just kidding. Use it sparingly.
Yeah.
All right, Chef Terry, are you ready? For
I am ready.
Prompt?
That was not a lie.
All right. Tell us a time when you made a colossal mistake in the kitchen.
Well, it's definitely a lie because he never
makes mistakes.
Yeah, I never make mistakes except for this one for sure. I made a few in my life. Well, there was a time where I was doing Halloween dinners, and there was a 13-course dinner with 13 wine, and that was the theme, 13 Halloween. We did that for probably 15 years at Rovers.
Did you do it on a Friday?
No, we did it on a Halloween night, and okay. costume was mandatory. The reason we did it on Halloween night is because the first couple of years I was open for Halloween, it was like dead. I was like, man, this is not a good night to go out. Let's find something to do that night. So anyway, one year, one of the courses that I made, we had two different intermezzo during the meal, one between the seafood and the poultry and one between the poultry and the meat. And I decided that I was going to make one with oyster water, the nectar of the oysters. I was going to make a sorbet with that. And... So I picked up, I had oyster, obviously, then I chucked and used the nectar from that. And I put some seaweed in there. And I garnished it with some pickled raspberry. And we were in November. So you have to remember, this was nothing seasonal here.
You just gave me, like, the chills.
Yeah. And needless to say, it went really well. Nobody liked it. It was a complete flop. And I was still at the end like, oh, it's not that bad, is it? You know when you really messed up and you're like, it's not that burn, is it? It's black. I mean, what do you want from me? Anyway,
what do you think, Alex? Is Terry telling you the truth?
I think that was very elaborate at the beginning. So I feel like that's pretty truthful. I don't know about the ingredients. That's pretty crazy. But but it seems like something you would try to really impress some food people.
You're right. I actually
did that.
That's
a true story. All right.
There you go. Alex, you win the diffuser. All
right. I was really trying to make it sound like it wasn't possible.
You better give that to your wife. She'll love that.
I will.
Wait. You can wear it too. It's for him and her.
All right. We now have Cindy up to the mic, our next Vic contestant.
Vic contestant?
Tom, you are next. Tell us about a time you got very hurt physically in the kitchen.
I'll go back to my days at Cafe Sport. Many times. I've hurt myself many times. But this was a time that I was hurt by somebody else deeply.
A cocktail waitress.
She was a line cook next to me. And we were cooking away, and It was super busy, and I was short-staffed, which is often the case at Cafe Sport. And I would work many triples. We were up in breakfast, lunch, and dinner at Cafe Sport and work many days, all three shifts, which is actually more like a double than a triple, right? So anyway, so it was cooking away. And I wear shorts and a T-shirt when I cook. And this young lady next to me was cooking her station, and she was trying to change out the pasta water, which we keep on the back of the stove, boiling pots of pasta water, for when you order. At that point, we were getting a lot of our... We had a red chili fettuccine with shrimp and a salsa on it. And she was changing out the boiling pasta water and tripped and dumped it on me.
Ouchie.
And it went down into my shoes and all over my feet. And we were in the middle of our rush. And there was no getting off the line. So I took off my shoes and socks and finished the shift with big blisters all over my legs and my thighs and my feet from the pasta water.
All right, Cindy. Is Tom telling the truth? Did he indeed get burned by the pasta water at Cafe Sport?
It so easily happens, so it seems so truthful. I've tripped many times in the kitchen, so I understand. I don't know. It seems like it would be a true story.
You think it's true?
She thinks it's true.
Oh, too bad.
Oh!
You are correct.
Oh.
Yay! Cindy wins a bread knife.
It was true. Wow.
Yes, exactly.
Kelly is up next.
And every time I see her, that was over 35 years ago, and I still see her once in a while. And every time she sees me, she says, "How's your legs?"
They haven't cut them off yet.
Chef Terry.
Yes.
You're next up.
All right.
Hi, Kelly. Thanks for
Kelly
coming out of our audience. Okay, Chef, tell us about the first job you had before you ever became a chef.
Before I became a chef.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I believe, do you know when I started to be a chef? Oh, good. That's going to be very helpful. So my first job was working for a construction company. And I was pulling, in France, we build house out of cement block. I don't know what you call those. You know, cement blocks, I guess. And then you pile them up.
Cinder blocks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I did that for about 3 months, and they decided that was not exactly what I wanted to do with my future. But it was a very hard, painful work. Putting these things together was not easy, and making cement, and it was... Anyway, I'm not going to tell you how old I was because that's against the law today, and also because that's going to give you some other information. So, but I did that before I started.
Here's what I will say: he started as a food apprenticeship at 14.
Oh, you had to tell her that.
Yes.
Oh.
All right, Kelly. What do you think? Did Chef Terry actually pour cement or work in
construction company
before he was ever a chef?
I'm going to say no.
Well, you're wrong.
In my hometown,
I was waiting between finishing school and going to be an apprentice, and I had a couple of months, and you don't waste time when you're in a small town and you're poor and whatever. You just
all right, Jeff, I got to cut you off because we got to move on. Stay with us for hour number two. When we come back, we're going to do our Taste of the Week on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Congratulations, you lost. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio. It's hour number two of our show that comes to you every week here on Cairo. We're happy to be part of the Cairo family. We are going to get started on our second hour with our favorite taste of the week. We got much coming up behind that, including Christina Buenanuevo. She's the bar manager at Current Bistro right down the street from us here on 4th Avenue. Also, of course, we've got Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. And... Not to forget, we have the Baker's Corner with Chef Brittany Bartleben, and we'll see if our timing matches up today. If not, we'll take questions from you, our trusty listeners. Chef, your favorite taste of the week. I'm Tom Douglas, by the way.
Oh, nice to meet you. I'm Terry Rotiro. Nice to meet you too. Favorite taste of the week. I have to go back to split pea soup with ham, onions, carrots, and celery. My wife made that.
You had a slow week.
I'm just trying to focus on one thing that we don't talk about very often, that people forget split peas are not probably common to most people. And I think it's an interesting subject to abort. So my wife bought a bag of split peas and decided we're going to have a split pea soup and ham. And I was like excited because we haven't had that in quite some time. There was one little interesting subject that happened through this, and maybe you can enlighten me on that, is we bought a bag of peas. She did not soak them. She cooked them. And half of the peas were cooked, and half of the peas were hard.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that happen often? Yeah. What's that about?
Some are hardly available to be cooked. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I would like to know the answer, so I'm going to do a little research into
that. So that's your favorite taste of the week, split pea soup with half-cooked peas. Boy, you had a tough week. I feel bad for you.
They were not.
We're going to move on from that. Tina?
They were not half-cooked. Tom, listen up.
Okay.
It's a subject that happens to...
that's a hard week.
This is a subject that happens to most people, and I'm very curious why this is happening, because I don't have that issue in the restaurant.
Just because it happened to you doesn't mean it happens to most people. I've never heard of this
before. Well, I see a lot of people shaking their head in the audience going, I went through that already.
All right. Let's move on.
We'll do some research and get to the bottom of that show.
But that soup was delicious.
After you strained it.
Don't knock a soup.
Yeah, don't knock the soup. Soups are delicious. And this time of year, get in the kitchen and make some soup.
Did you have to go to the dentist office afterwards?
It's not that hard, Tom. Don't be so dramatic. All right.
Well, I got a new gadget. As you know, we've talked frequently about my whole food plant-based thing. And
oh,
I got
my
this
God, have we?
I know. You're sick of it. Tom hates it.
You should have your own show, Tina.
I know, right? Well, I did.
I don't hate it. It's just, oh, my God.
One of the things.
What a life trauma.
One of the things that's done for me, as you know, is I've learned to cook a lot more. I've had to cook a lot more.
And it's very cool.
Learn a lot about food and create more tasty things for myself. So I was gifted this new gadget called the Almond Cow, and so I'm making my own almond milk at home. But one of the cool things that I learned is I made this golden milk, which was cashews, dates, turmeric, vanilla, a little bit of salt, and you put it in the machine and it makes this milk, and it was delicious. It tastes almost like not as strong as a chai, but like a really light chai. Delicious and good for you. I put it in my coffee and I drank a whole cup of it. It was quite good.
Sounds delicious.
So
yeah,
go
yeah.
back
I'll
and
put a recipe on our Facebook page.
Yeah, so I'm just curious. Are you using fresh turmeric?
Yeah, I use fresh turmeric.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Oh, and I use fresh ginger, too. I forgot that.
Fresh ginger.
Mm-hmm.
And your almonds are toasted or untoasted? Are they shell on, shell off?
I use actually raw cashews. This one was cashews.
Oh, cashews.
So I used raw cashews.
Uh-huh. So and you put untoasted.
It, yep, yeah. And you just put it in this little basket in this machine. It's kind of like a coffee maker. You know, it just presses it, and you add water, and you hit the button. And then I use the pulp to make other things. So earlier this week, I did almond milk, and I made crackers with the pulp. So I thought,
look at you.
That's no waste, and I made my own crackers.
I am stunned.
Yeah, so with the crackers, I...
This is a girl who thought the kitchen was a place to park your car a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's a true story. Well, I learned that you could do this without using the machine, of course. It was just easier for me to have the machine. If you made your own almond milk, you'd, mm-hmm. you know, press it and strain it yourself.
Yeah, you could use a French press. Or
sure. But with that pulp, there's lots of things you can do with it. So, again, no waste. So I just used... I used flaxseed to make the egg... to kind of do a binder for it, and then
for
rosemary,
your cracker,
uh-huh, for
mm-hmm.
the cracker, and then rosemary and sea salt,
mm-hmm.
baked them, and they were amazing.
Wow!
Yeah, so it was
I'm
really fun.
I'm impressed. And I have a question.
Bring them next week.
Is the almond milk better than the stuff in the market?
Quite honestly, I don't think it has a tremendous difference in taste. It tastes just like any almond milk I would get. It's saving me a bit of money because it's just a cup of almonds and water. It makes a whole big jug of almond milk, and I know what's in it, right? It's just water and almonds,
right?
So
right.
Yeah, so it was
and
really
it's
fun.
Also
it was fun and it was tasty. So that's my taste of the week.
Wow, that's cool.
That's cool. I'm curious. You know, we often talk about machines that we have in our kitchens. And what would you keep and what would you get rid of?
Yeah,
I'm curious in a year if you'll still have this in your small apartment kitchen. Because
yeah,
you just never know, right?
It's just so easy and it's such easy cleanup and it's relatively small that I anticipate continuing. But I will keep you posted. I will be super honest about that because so far it's been a fun toy.
My favorite taste of the week came from Hawaii. I have both my least favorite and my favorite. I was there for the last 3 days. We were looking at a property over there for a little restaurant. And my least favorite taste was, you know, I'm kind of under the weather, and when I go to Hawaii, I just want to get trashy.
Right.
Right? I want coconut prawns, and I want a Mai Tai. Right? Number one.
This is the new year.
Trashy's good for me. That's my highest compliment. Number one, no coconut prawns. Just none.
No?
So super sad.
What?
Super sad. No coconut prawns.
Would they run out of
coconut
prawns?
How do you go to Hawaii
prawns?
And not have coconut prawns?
Wow.
You can have them on Lake Union in the middle of winter.
I had them at the garage yesterday with a holiday party.
Yeah, exactly. Secondly, the Mai Tais, crap. Everywhere I went, bad Mai Tais. You know, everything's premixed and gross, and there wasn't a technically flawless Mai Tai to be had.
Oh.
And I had maybe five of them, and then I gave up. Because $125 worth of Mai Tais, I didn't drink more than one total Mai Tai.
You could have bought a few gallons of rum.
The good news is I was up at the farmer's market up on top of the hill in Waimea, which is 10 miles off the coast where all the resorts are. And there's a company, I want to say the Kona Baking Company or something like that, and they make the most delicious coffee-based shortbread cookie that I've ever had in my whole life. It was stunning. And I can't wait to tell Brittany Bartleben about it because it's so good. I brought some back with me, and I'm going to steal the idea. Totally rip it off.
Let's see how good you do.
Completely stolen.
Let's see how good you do.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to do it. Brittany's going to do it.
Hey, Tom, up next we have Christina Buenaventura coming.
I'm so excited. She's right from the restaurant right down the street at the New Sound Hotel.
Yeah.
Current. All right. Looking forward to that on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's time for the Seattle Kitchen Show to continue here on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And, you know, we're having some thoughts about Dry January. Our dry soda company, a local legend, is kind of promoting this whole January dry month. And so restaurants around town, I believe more than 30 of them, are featuring their product in their bars for these kind of, I'm hesitant to call them mocktails. That suggests they're not real. They're totally real. They just don't have alcohol in them.
Yeah.
And as we know, there's certainly a trend out there that many people are going out throughout the evening and not having alcohol. They're having mocktails or they're having water or whatever.
I like the name Zero Bar.
Zero Proof.
Zero Proof Bar.
Zero Proof Bar.
I like that.
Well, that little voice you heard was Christina Buenaventura. She is here from the Current Bistro, which is right down on 4th Avenue and Lenora Street, just past, if you're going north, just past the Cinerama Theater, best theater in the Northwest. You are, Christina, you are all into this. You are super into this mocktail thing. What's going on?
I think mocktails are a great idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you want to go into a restaurant and maybe you still want to hang out with your friends, but you're partaking in Dry January, so you don't want just a Coke or something. Mm-hmm. You want, like, a fancy mocktail.
You want to feel like you're out on the town.
Definitely. So we do actually have, at Current Bistro, a zero-proof cocktail section on our menu, which includes just some house-curated mocktails. Mm-hmm. That we come up with to cater to those audiences also.
So, just out of curiosity, when you approach it, are you approaching it like any other cocktail, except leaving the alcohol out?
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Still looking for flavors that go well together, mm-hmm. Trying to come up with something that's fun and delicious and well-balanced, but sans the booze.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you use any stock of any kind? Any, I mean, for liquid base purposes, do you use vegetable fruits? Do you use all those different ingredients, or do you use syrups?
We'll do syrups. I'll do a lot of infused syrups, so rosemary infused simples. I really like to use ginger beer in them as well, and then also fresh fruits. Mm-hmm. Definitely, right.
Chef. Are you suggesting that you use like beef stock in your cocktails?
I know I'm not going to talk to you about that. Jeez, the way you say it, make it sound. No, I mean, you could use beef stock, you could use veal stock, you could, I mean, not veal stock, but probably things like fish stock. You could use different...
No, chef. No,
yes, you can.
We just heard this earlier in the show about you making oyster granita. And
I know, but...
It was not a good idea.
I'm running out of lye. I got to make up another one.
Exactly. So, you know, where are you beginning with your mocktails? Do you use a flavor-infused soda? Do you make your own sparkling water and then start from there? How do you get started down a mocktail?
Like I was saying earlier, I really like to do ginger beer mm-hmm. in cocktails. So I'll kind of start with the ginger flavor and see what I want to do with that. So right now we have one with rosemary in it as well uh-huh. and some lime juice. Just things that pair really well with that. We also have a hibiscus tea that we make in-house that's made with allspice, cinnamon, cloves, all sorts of baking spices that we
in
serve.
The hibiscus tea?
Yes.
That sounds so cool.
That sounds delicious.
Oh, so delicious. Yeah. But we serve that warm also as a mocktail, and then you can add tequila if you want to, you know. Right.
So the hibiscus kind of, I feel, like adds a lot of tannin. Are you getting into that part of the cocktail? Where how does it mouthfeel and how does it work in that way?
Yeah. So you get that nice tart flavor, very citrusy, but then that allspice and the cinnamon just sits in your mouth after. Mm-hmm. It's very nice.
Lovely. Chef, I'm a very big hibiscus fan. We grow them at our farm.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's very cool.
And dry some of them and make teas out of them. But it's
love
a good
the
place
flavor.
To start. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you think about the dry soda line, which is one of the local businesses here, do you have a favorite flavor that you use in the dry soda? I personally love the vanilla for a base.
Yeah, it's a good base. I like the cucumber. Yeah, the cucumber one is very good. It's good to make things that are going to be not too complicated because cucumber is, you know, a good flavor, but you don't want to overpower it. Mm-hmm. So it goes really well with other vegetables. If you want to use fresh sliced cucumber with it, you use a cucumber dry soda as a base, and then you put some mint or you put some different herbs, and you can muddle and then make that into a cocktail with that. And it's basically embellishing the base. You know, it's what you're doing as a cocktail maker. So,
Christina, how important is the visual on a mocktail? Like, I think of, say, rhubarb syrup, right, where it's going to give that cocktail such a gorgeous reddish look, which is going to look delicious before you even taste it.
I think it's very important. Mm-hmm. I think that when I order a mocktail at a bar, I want to have something set in front of me that has a beautiful garnish, something that's very colorful, something that's very eye-catching. You know, same with cocktails in general. I think that the visual aspect is a huge part of getting a drink.
And do you think of the garnish as something you're going to eat or something you're going to look at?
Either or. Depends on my mood.
You don't mind taking the garnish off the drink and not eat it?
I mean, I think that garnishes should be edible in general. I don't think that you should put an edible garnish on a cocktail, personally.
Especially a poisonous.
Yes, definitely not. Not trying to kill anybody right now.
I garnish all my rhubarb drinks with the leaves of the rhubarb.
Yeah. Perfect.
Let's go back to your ginger beer, because that seems to be a favorite of yours. Okay, let's endorse a brand. Do you have a favorite one that you like to use?
I really like to use Timber City ginger beer.
Timber City. Where's that from?
It's from here, mm-hmm. Seattle. Mm-hmm. I like it because it has a nice spice to it. It has a nice body, but it's not too much. It doesn't overpower things like some can in general.
That's a very important point. Is if you make the base for something, you don't want it to be overpowering for the whole drink, because otherwise you're basically working for no reason.
Exactly. And I also like the Timber City ginger beer because it's a little less sweet. So then I can add sugar and I can add the sweetness that I want to.
Oh, a fruit that will add sugar. Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Cool. You're teaching a class next week on these mocktails.
I am.
At the Current Bistro.
Yes.
At the Sound Hotel.
Yes.
Glad we got that straight. And tell us about that. You have about a minute.
Okay, so we do cocktail classes at Current Bistro once a month. They're on the second Tuesday of every month. This month we are doing a New Year, New Me Dry January mocktails and a low-carb cocktail
class.
Low carb.
So, yes.
So just water?
So water. Yeah. Shots of water all around.
But it's just a special water.
So we are going to be learning how to make shrubs, which is something
that
I
really
like.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah. So that starts at 8 o'clock. It's first come, first serve. So get in there early. I'd recommend around 7:30. And it's a great way to learn some cool tricks and meet some people. Tons of fun.
Any website to go to reserve? Or is it just phone call? Or how do you reserve?
So Current Bistro's Facebook page. We'll have a link on there.
Cool. Congratulations.
Super exciting. Congratulations. Thanks for joining us here at the Hot Stove Society.
Thank you.
Up next, it's time for the Baker's Corner with Chef Brittany Bartolini. She's going to come all the way across the street. And I see our sandwiches just arrived. I'm so excited. I could be starving to death.
Yeah, we're going
to
be.
On Cairo Radio, live in front of you right now, starving to death, 97.3 FM. Thank you for joining us. It's Tom Douglas.
And Terry Rotero.
My voice is, it's got two more segments left in it.
Good. Exactly what we need.
Exactly. This is the Seattle Kitchen Show on Hot Stove Society. If you want to come join us at any point, just go to hotstovesociety.com, buy a ticket. Cheapskate. Comes with breakfast and coffee and tea.
$20.
Best deal in town.
Was that worth the $20 out there? Was that
a few people actually won prizes today during our cabbage contest at the end of the first hour? So, you know, this is a place to win. This show is for winners.
That's right.
And now we bring in Chef Brittany Bartolabin.
Hello.
Hello, Brittany. Nice to see you again.
Winners.
Nice to see you all.
Pastry chef.
Yeah.
Wintertime. It's not July.
There's not
much. Strawberries and blackberries and blueberries.
That's right.
The colors
cherries.
Are hard to come by.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got citrus.
And as a company, I don't know how you feel, Terry, but as a company, you know, we are very seasonal.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of the things I do say, though, is in wintertime, citrus is the season.
Of course.
Tropical fruits are a long-held tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Pineapples traveled beautifully, right, on ships and jets and mangoes and things like that you could pick that would ripen on the way. So we do make the exception this time of year personally.
Yeah.
To offer more tropical fruits in nature. So.
And citrus especially, coming out of the holidays when nobody wants to even look at a spice or caramel or just those flavors. People are, Boxing Day happens and they just won't even order those flavors. Mm-hmm. So citrus is a really energizing, bright, it almost feels healthy in a dessert way to...
I like the almost feel
it
healthy.
It almost feels healthy, yeah.
I think lemon curd is really healthy, except 50% sugar.
It's mostly sugar, but that lemon juice that's in there is real good for you.
It's vitamin C all the way.
Yeah, and what's really cool, I mean, there are three original citrus fruits, the ancestral varieties, and that is pomelo, mandarin, and citron, but... From those three fruits, I've lost count of how many varieties of citrus fruits there are out there now. So we've got a lot to pick from. It's not just lemons and oranges.
Right.
This time of year, it's kind of just... I always have a different favorite every year. Last year, it was Caracara oranges. I've fallen in love with Buddha's hand. This year, I'm going back to the blood oranges. I never really know... what's going to capture my attention, but this year I'm into the blood oranges.
Me too,
They're so pretty. Yeah. And they have that slight...
Well, they also have more higher acid or
more acidic,
sugar.
And there's a little bit of a berry flavor in there too. And so it's like your eyes are telling you that it's almost a berry. And then
that's what I'm saying. I think that's in your head, personally.
But. Maybe it is. I mean, the way we eat with our eyes and the way our brain messes with us, messes with our taste buds. So that's probably true, but I'll take it this time of year. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I was looking at our bakery case yesterday, and for January, we got some color going on in there. We've got a dark chocolate gluten-free bundt cake with a blood orange glaze on it that is just, and with a little wedge of candied blood orange slice right on top of it. It's just gorgeous. We've got these
The audience is leaving to go across the street. Hold on, guys.
Stick around.
We're
the segment's not
yet.
Over yet.
We still have a few more minutes.
We've got these wonderful cream biscuits that we're just... we're putting a little hollow in before we bake and then filling it with lemon curd.
Mm.
So you've got your lemon curd right in your little biscuit. It's just so tasty. There's all sorts of...
These guys just ate their breakfast sandwich and they're going, Perfect.
Yeah. So, yeah, this time of year, it's actually really fun for me because I'm sick of playing with all the holiday spices, and it's really fun to energize my palate.
It's also the time of the year to use those purees and those frozen stuff you've got made 3 months ago.
Sure.
You know, it's time to use it. This is the time of the year to just take them out of the freezer and use them.
Yeah.
Pureed quince, apple, pear, whatever you have in the freezer, and cranberries. And
oh, let's not forget, I mean, we are literally still in prime apple and pear season.
Pears are still going strong. Absolutely. Yeah. Apples and pears are still going strong. Have you guys tried this Cosmic Crisp apple yet?
The what did it?
The Cosmic Crisp apple. It's getting the marketing behind this apple has been just great.
It's cosmic.
It's cosmic. but it's out of Wazoo. Agricultural department. Mm-hmm. I think there has developed this apple. It's better than the Honeycrisp, in my opinion. And I tried baking an apple pie with them over the holidays, and it's a fantastic baking apple. It's crisp. The Honeycrisp to me, they're a little bit. They don't have much substance to them. They're really juicy and crispy and tasty, but the meat of the apple itself just seems a little light. But these Cosmic Crisp apples have a little more of a density, so they're more of like a Fuji apple. Oh. But boy, is it sweet, and it's a really nice balance of sweetness and acidity.
Hello. I want to go back to citrus.
Sorry. I got excited. You guys brought up apples and pears,
not
me.
I think you should. No, that's on the market right now. It's seasonal and local.
What?
Tom, come on, man.
Let's go back to citrus.
Come on. No.
Here's a simple citrus idea. You did come to talk about citrus.
I did come to talk about citrus, yes.
I love your apples, though.
I do love my apples.
I've been taking these blood oranges, and if you look for the ones, and this isn't always true, but I think it's mostly true, the more blush on the outside, the more red you're going to get on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I've been taking them, slicing them thin. I put on my largest 12-inch saute pan, sprinkle sugar on the bottom, layer my sliced oranges, rind and everything, but thin slice, 16th of an inch or so, layer them along the bottom, turn on the heat. Mm-hmm. And let them caramelize a bit.
Lovely.
And then I just put a pot brisée right over top, and then bake it like an upside down cake.
Mm-hmm.
Turn it out, and you end up with this kind of orange pie.
The prettiest thing in the world.
Super pretty orange pie. And all you got to do is put whipped cream. It's, you know, it's not a pie like thick pie like an apple
pie.
It's
like a tart.
It's more like a tart.
Like a tart.
Your tart to ten.
And I love, because the juice of the orange and the sugar caramelizes the skin. And it's just a beautiful, simple wintertime dessert.
Lovely.
You can make it a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Put that
thank
in your...
Thank you. Put that in my...
You know, I would... You know, talking about tarte tatin, I would just put sliced apple of those Cosmic apple on
we
top of that.
We are not allowed to talk about that right now,
okay.
Chef Terry.
I'm just saying.
One thing I really enjoy doing with oranges is just sort of like what you're doing, is just slicing them very thin. I use the meat slicer at the Dahlia. You could use a mandolin, or if you've got a really nice sharp knife. And then it's just... 2 parts water to 1 part sugar, so a little lighter than a traditional syrup, and just enough of that liquid to cover the slices, similar to you in that large skillet, and just let those go for a little while. You're not going to let it caramelize, but what the juices are going to release from the orange, and it's going to combine with that simple syrup, and it will thicken, and you let it go for a while, very low heat, turning those slices occasionally, and you end up with these gorgeous, just candied slices
of
citrus.
Yeah, and it's important to remind everyone, very, very,
very low
heat.
Mm-hmm.
And very low, as low as you can get it.
That's what I did for my dessert special for New Year's Eve at the Dahlia. I just put one large slice of candied Caracara orange right on top of just a simple lemon curd tart, and served that with a lemon poppy seed sherbet, and just a nice little toasted meringue, and then Negroni pas de foie. It sold out. It was delicious.
Well, why wouldn't it?
I know.
Pretty much, all the servers zeroed in on that Negroni pas de foie. Were sneaky.
And there's one thing I do with lemon, that I make a lemon confit, so I take the lemon slices, same idea as what you do with the oranges, and except I do a 3-2-1 kind of part, like I do rice vinegar, sugar,
ooh,
and
vinegar,
water.
Love that.
And then it creates that sweet and sour, and the vinegar actually tames down the pithiness of the lemon.
Oh, I've got to try that.
It doesn't become as pithy.
Yeah.
But the secret of that is to put parchment paper on top and cook it extremely low. Be patient. It's going to take 4 or 5 hours to cook a whole pan of sliced lemon, but you're just leaving it on your stove, and then you'll have this marvelous slice of confit lemon. And then you can puree that. You can cut it down. You can put it into cookies, cakes, shortbread, anything.
The beauty is these last for a long time, too.
And you can keep them all. You have a piece of steamed salmon since you're steaming this month because you're going on a diet. And put that right on top of your fish, and it's delicious.
Let's talk before we finish this segment for a second about picking citrus. Now, when I am shopping in the grocery store, I'm a student of watching other people shop. And people always look at my cart all the time. People just walk up and say, I need three lemons. They just grab three lemons.
Right.
Or same with limes, right? And there's an art to picking the right citrus.
Yes.
And when you touch them, if they feel hard, put it back.
Put it back.
Right? If they feel like the skin is loose, put it back. Mm-hmm. If you've got a big loose skin on your blood orange or on your grapefruit, put it back. What you want is something that feels tight all the way through, but still, when you press on it with your fingers, it has give.
Yes.
And so that super hard one, you're not going to get any juice out of that.
No.
You might get a half ounce per the whole lemon, right. Whereas on the one where it has give, you might get an ounce and a half out of a whole lemon.
And they should be heavy.
They should be heavy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think there's a real art in picking citrus that people spend all this time shaking a cantaloupe or putting their nose up to one end.
Yeah.
And then they just go buy the worst limes or the worst lemons in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta.
And they do exist, those worst lime and worst lemons.
Oh, they sure do. Oh, yeah.
We've all had them.
Just for like $1 a piece.
You get home and you're like slicing that lemon in half for your martini and you're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. And here's the thing. They cost the same.
Yeah,
it costs a bad lemon and a good lemon costs exactly the same because they're selling them by the each.
Yeah. Sumo mandarins are coming, guys. Have you guys had these?
Those are delicious.
Yeah, they're so good.
Now that's almost an opposite to the story I just told because they do have a loose skin.
Yes, don't disregard everything Tom just said for the sumo mandarins. Just grab them; they're all delicious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's MFK Fisher. I believe that's where I read this. She had this thing where she would take a clementine and she would peel it and put it on her radiator on top of a newspaper for, I don't know, a half hour. It comes back and you come back to this and it's got this shattering skin and they're extra juicy. It's a wonderful way to eat an orange.
That is crazy thinking right there.
Yes, it is.
All right, up next, Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. I trust that Brittany's going to hang with us.
I'll be here.
All right, on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. For Thought Tasty Trivia on Cairo Radio. This is Chef Tom Douglas.
And Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And Tina, you are here. Tina's our producer from Large Media, and you are here to administer our quiz.
Yes. Whoever gets the most answers correct is the winner, but whoever has the least answers correct is obviously the loser.
Loser.
Yes, they don't feel good, but they will be giving something, some prize position away to someone who loves this radio show. And today we had a brave audience member come up to the microphone. She did not win that time. I'm going to give her another chance. Kelly. We're going to play for Kelly today. She's in our audience. So, Brittany, should you lose today, what would you like to give to Kelly?
I will give Kelly a $100 gift card to the Dahlia Bakery.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Beat that, guys.
Bam. Bam.
Way better than that diffuser or a bread knife. She might have won.
All right.
Yeah, I'm stunned. How about brunch for two at Lule?
Nice. Brunch for
Saturday
two
Saturday or Sunday.
Wonderful. Tom, if you lose the quiz today,
I'm going to give away. We had a guest from the bartender from Current over at the Sound Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So she has left. Christina has left a $100 gift card to the bar there. And I'm going to add in a $100 gift card to the Palace Kitchen.
Whoa. Well, Tom, you got to lose today.
Tom needs to lose.
Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you, when I lose big.
I'll tell you one thing. We don't need to play this. She's a big winner already.
Chef Thierry, your first question. How do chefs keep cooked green vegetables green? You have some options. Do they add citric acid or lemon juice? They shock them in ice water, partly freeze, or they use spinach juice.
I love the spinach juice idea. That sounds so lovely. I think they're going to shock them in ice water.
That's correct. Nicely done.
I will also say, since we're an informational show, I find that to be annoying. to hold do that water bath on those green vegetables just to keep them green, but you lose all the nutrients as you're doing that. So whatever.
All right. So don't worry about keeping them green. Keep all the juiciness in.
No, eat them as you cook them. Cook what you need and steam them. I did that the other night.
Steam them. Don't boil them.
Yeah, all steam. Right. I steam some broccolini and just eat them right after that. Don't cool them off.
All right, question number two, Chef. What is the hottest part of a chili pepper? Is it the flesh, seeds, where seeds attach to white, spongy internal membrane, or is it the stem?
The seeds. Well, attached to the membrane, yes.
Correct.
Of course, because those two together
oh,
are going to be...
Oh, that felt like a little weird.
Yeah, that's kind of a...
All right, question number three for you. What is buttermilk? You have some options. Would you like them? Because that's not one of them. Is it a byproduct of the butter-making process? Is it artificially soured skim milk? Is it whole milk naturally soured by standing 24 hours? Or is it reconstituted powdered milk? The audience is murmuring, and I think if you perk your ears up, you might be able to hear the answer.
I don't know what they're murmuring, but I don't hear that way. I'm going to go with number two.
You are correct. Artificially soured skim milk. That is three correct. You were on a streak, Chef. Let's go for four. Brawn, B-R-A-W-N, is an old term for what? Is it bone, fat, lean meat, or bread?
I'm going to go with the bread.
The answer is lean meat.
Well, all right.
No, it's an old term. You're a young man. How
of
would
course.
You know?
I mean.
All right. Question number five for you. The mouthfeel quality of wine, known as grip, is contributed by what? Alcohol, sugar, acid, or tannins?
Tannins.
Correct. That's four correct answers. A very good showing, Chef.
Four out of
nice
five.
Job, Chef.
Four. Not bad.
There's always a five out of five.
Brittany Bartoleben, four is the number to beat. Your
All
first
right.
question. If you have hard water with dissolved minerals, it will boil what? At a much higher temperature, at a much lower temperature, the same as soft water, or at a slightly higher temperature?
I don't know, but I'll go with the first one, higher.
Slightly higher is the answer.
Slightly higher.
Sorry. Sorry about that. I mean, that doesn't seem fair. All right, Chef Brittany. To scald milk is to what? Heat until it boils, heat to just below boiling, pass under a broiler, or mix in a little boiling water?
The second one.
Correct. Chef Brittany, a soft red wine has too little what? Acid, fruit, tannin, or oak?
Acid.
The answer is tannin.
That's the second time.
I would have guessed acid, too.
Yeah. You're a
Thank
bakery
you, Tom.
Chef,
yeah.
not
yeah.
a sommelier.
I don't know wine.
It's not fair.
I know what I like to drink. That's it.
Not fair at all. All right, question number four for you. The proper way to cut a round cheese is...
With a knife.
A wire.
Try that.
Is it A, wrap in a napkin and chisel cut wedges? B, use a broad spoon to scoop off top? C, in radial wedges like a pie, or D, remove the rind entirely and then cube it.
You're a baker. I would go with the pie.
It's round.
I would say, yeah.
I'll go with the pie because this is a ridiculous question. I cut cheese how I want to cut cheese.
Believe me, we know.
I was like wondering when that joke was coming, so I set you up.
Everybody's
for it.
Moving
You're all day, everybody.
You don't even have to tell us.
Was that correct? The pie.
That
answer.
Was
okay,
correct.
Great.
All right, your last question. The original handwritten recipe of this famous dessert is in a bank vault and was the subject of a lawsuit. Is it the Mozart Kugeln, the Sacre Torte, the Black Forest Torte, or Death by Chocolate?
I'm going to go with Mozart Kugeln.
It's actually the Sacre Torte.
Hey, mama mia.
Two correct for you, Brittany Bartoleben.
I think I may have lost, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Let's see.
She's holding hope for
holding
you, Tom.
I hope that Tom doesn't feel well.
That's awesome.
Chef Tom Douglas, how much time should you allow for a 12-pound frozen turkey to thaw in the refrigerator?
48 hours.
Wow, you are good. Boy, are you smart. Didn't even need the options. That's what kind of a great chef you are. All right, question number two for you. How much was the first Twinkie? How much did the first Twinkie cost? Was it three for a dime, two for a nickel, 10 cents each, or 5 cents each?
Okay, two for a nickel.
Tom cheated, so I'm not giving you that one. Just kidding.
Who knows that?
Two for two. Good
two
job.
For two.
All right, question number three. Danish pastry originated where? Denmark, Austria, France, or Norway?
I'm going to say Austria.
You are correct. So far, a perfect score, Chef. Let's go for all five.
It's right where they get the soccer tort from. It's in a bank vault there somewhere.
You could fold those two questions into one.
All right, Chef. In picking grapes for wine, it is essential that the grapes reach the winery with their skins intact, absolutely dry, without exposure to the sun, or at night.
I'm going to say skins intact because it's the most natural.
All right. Don't gild the lily. You got it. Okay. All right. Your last question. Fining enhances wine clarity. The traditional additive for this purpose is what? Ground fish protein? Whipped egg whites? Oak chips? Or live bacteria? The additive.
Egg whites.
Correct. That's a perfect score, Tom Douglas.
Thank
Tom
you.
Douglas. So perfect
nice.
Again.
Done.
Who knows? Who knew? Thanks to whoever was born out there in 1930 that knew the price of Twinkies. If you want to be part of our show, you can join the community on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. The show is produced by our friends at Large Media. That's L-A-R-J Media. Our sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to HotStoveSociety.com and buy tickets for only $20. Comes with breakfast, and a good one at that. Also, remember, if you missed any episode of Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to Seattle Kitchen on your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.